So what I want to look at today, I want to try to get understanding of we're coming to Rosh Chodesh, the beginning of Av, the month of Av, the Hebrew month of Av, Menachem Av, and it starts a period of time for us that unfortunately is not the an auspicious time. It's kind of there's a certain negativity that's associated with this time period. And then trying to understand what it's all about, kind of do a quick tour of what where the negativity comes from. And then I want to try to analyze. I want to try to understand what went wrong, and try to understand how we potentially could work towards fixing the issue. Okay, so or at least what we call the avoda, the effort that we need to do in terms of positive, constructive things that we can do towards perhaps bringing the redemption. Okay, so we see that there's events that occur outside of our control, but then there are things that we potentially could do that could impact things positively. So I want to try to understand, I want to kind of get under into the guts of what went wrong around Tisha B'Av, and then from there maybe we'll be able to see, we'll have some kind of insight into what we can do to perhaps counter and have a positive impact in creating a rectification of that which went wrong. Okay, so let's see here. So it says in Tana 29a, this is the Talmud. So in the Talmud, in the Babylonian Talmud, it says that the Mishnah teaches that from when the month of Av begins, one decreases acts of rejoicing. Rav Yehuda, the son of Rav Shmuel bar Shilat, said in the name of Rav, just as when Av begins, one decreases rejoicing, so too, when the month of Adar begins, one increases rejoicing. So what you see from here, the takeaway is that when it comes to the month of Av, that there's something that there's some kind of negative forces at hand that kind of brings us down. And so what happened exactly? So first things, okay, so let's just another little piece that comes up in the Talmud. Actually, I'm going to jump to the tragedies that occurred on Tisha B'Av, because what happened on Tisha B'Av seems to impact the month as a whole. So what are the five things that occurred on Tisha B'Av? So it tells us, first things first, is that the 12 spies sent by Moses to observe the land of Canaan returned from their mission. Only two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, brought a positive report, while the others spoke disparagingly about the land. The majority report caused the children of Israel to cry, panic, and despair of ever entering the promised land. For this, they were punished by God, that generation would not enter the land. And the Medrash quotes God as saying, about this event, you cried before me pointlessly. I will fix for you this day as a day of crying for the generations. Okay? So this idea that what basically the precursor, the start of the negative trend of this time period is the fact that the spies go into the land and they come back with this negative report. So we're going to focus on that, but let's see what else goes on. So we have two other, well, there are four others that are listed. The first is that the first temple built by King Solomon was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar in 587 before the Common Era. And then, so that's the first temple. When was that? On Tisha B'Av, and it burned through the 10th of Av. The second temple was built by Ezra and Nehemiah. It was also destroyed on the 9th of Av, but that was in 70 of the Common Era. And then from there, we see that the Romans subsequently crushed Bar Kokhba's revolt, and the city of Beitar was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. And then Turnus Rufus plowed the Temple Mount also on Tisha B'Av. Okay, so we have all these bad things that occur on Tisha B'Av. It all starts with the spies going and giving the negative reports. So what is that connection? How does that tie in to the temples being destroyed? How do we understand, or is there some kind of connection between the destruction of the temples and the negative report that the spies gave of the land of Israel? Okay, so you see this, points 2, 3, both temples destroyed, 4 and 5 are also outgrowths of the temple's destruction. So we have 2 through 5, they seem to all connect, right? Temples destroyed, outgrowths of temple destruction. How does the first thing tie in? What is the sin of the spies? What does that have to do with the temples? Right? How does that connect? How do we see it? Is there
an answer from us?
Yeah, sure. Tell me what you think.
Lack of faith and a lack of connection to Hashem.
Okay, lack of faith, lack of connection to Hashem. Okay. But what does that have to do? Why it could be in anything? Why does it have to do with the temple or the land or a report about the land? You know,
because that's where it was going to be, where the Beit HaMikdash was going to be established, and you know, it was a question of whether or not this land was the right place that God was going to give to us, or we would have a connection with Him.
Okay. So you're saying so we start off, we have the land of Israel, we have a connect to that because God promised it to us. And that the temple, is really also kind of a derivative of that. It's really, they're all connected. Okay, so the fact that they came back and already started up with giving a negative report about the land, and then from there, when there's going to be, you're saying the key point is that, and the common connect between these things is that it's all about how we connect to God. And so that
I have a thought that the people rejected what God thought was good.
Okay.
That's good too.
Okay,
so
they reject what God says, this is going to be good for you, we reject it, and therefore
He knows what's best for us.
Okay, but what does it have to do with the temple though? I mean, like, so you're saying the temple's good for us, or like, I mean, what, how does that, you know, so Mark's saying that the land of Israel and the temples are representative of our connection to God. And so when we, you know, throw it out, so to speak, by going negative on the report of Israel, the land of Israel, it's really it's basically we're turning our backs on God.
One's physical and one's spiritual. So the land is the physical part, the temples are the spiritual part.
Okay.
It's a rejection, right? It's like exactly tying both those elements together as the ultimate rejection of God.
Okay, so rejection of God. Okay, so good. Okay, so we're saying, I'm just going to take a step back. I'm gonna just make sure we have it tight. So what we're saying now is that we have the land of Israel, and we have the temples, both Bat HaMikdash. The temples represent our connection to God. Right, that's really what it talks about is the connection to God, and it starts going bad when the spies come back with their negative reports. That makes the mark on history. That from they cried, the Jews reacted in a way that was inappropriate, and God said, that we saw here quoted by the Medrash. Where do we see this here? It says, the Medrash quotes God as saying about this event, you cried before me pointlessly, I will fix for you this day as a day of crying for the generations. All right, so that this will become a point of, again, I guess when we did something to damage our relationship with God, and we see that that's somehow tied to the land of Israel, and that the temple also has this aspect that they will all represent this idea of connection to God. We turned our back on that. And so God says, are you, okay, I get it. And then, you know, we have a history of bad things occurring on.
Jonathan, is one of the, I think there's also an element of unity amongst the people and Jewish unity, and that everyone being on the same page, because the spies, you know, Joshua and Caleb came back and they made, you know, a positive report, where the others, you know, were either afraid or intimidated, and they wouldn't, you know, we weren't on the same page, you know, all of us together.
Okay. So, but
and
so,
then, you know, with the destruction of the temple, you have, you know, the baseless hatred and, you know, the, you know, other rebellions. I mean, people weren't all together on the same page.
Mm-hmm. So you want to say that there was a lack of unity, and somehow that also has a negative impact. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But I think that if we're going to say at least the first go at it, is that there seems to be where they damage the connection that we have with God. But that seems, and that both the land of Israel and the temple seem to have, they both represent, when we think of like connection to God, temple, that's easy, right? That's a place where we come and we commune, we connect to God in a more intense way, even though God's everywhere. And then the land of Israel also has that kind of aspect. Like, this is our place where God said, he promised it to us, we're going to come to this place, we connect to God in this place. Okay, fine. Good. So now, the question is, so let's say, I'm assuming, and I think we're all satisfied with at least, you know, that this type of how we constructed this. So now, what I want to try to understand, because this, we need to get to like a little bit into the a deeper. This is all nice on the surface. It makes sense. But the question is, what went wrong? What went wrong? And then how do we, by understanding what went wrong, how do we fix it? Okay?
I can make this a bigger font.
Okay, so now, how do we,
Jonathan,
yeah.
I'm having a hard time reading this font. It's like too small for
it's too
eyes.
Small? Okay, so let me go. I'll
make it a little bigger.
Sure, let me try it.
Thank you so
not
much.
Not a problem. That's what I, it's perfect. Let me take it up 1 second there, and we'll take it to. Is that
so much better?
Okay, great. Perfect. Okay.
Really, thank you. I appreciate
And if you want a copy of it, I can also send it to you later. So not that there's anything really earth shattering here, but okay. Okay. So I wanna focus on, if the first event that occurred where things went off the rails is the spies. When Moshe sends the spies into the land and they come back. And this is like the launch point. This is the starting point of where everything seems to go bad. So we need to understand this event, okay? And the term, we talk about the spies, right? In English, we call them the spies. In Hebrew, we call them the miraglim, okay? A spy is referred to, at least it could be referred to in many different ways. The way that the spies were referred to, the 12 that went into the land, were called miraglim. We call it the chet of the miraglim, the sin of the miraglim. Okay? So now, there is another story in the Torah earlier on that we see this idea of spies. And we see the story, you read it, kind of go right through it. It always was strange to me. And then I recently heard this explanation. I said, wow, this is unbelievable. So the story goes to when the brothers, right, Jacob's the sons, Yaakov's sons, come down to Egypt for the first time. They don't have any food, and they come down to Egypt. And so I want to read with you the story of what happened there. It's chapter 42 in Bereishis, okay? Bereishis 42, Genesis 42. When Jacob saw that there were food rations to be had in Egypt, he said to his sons, why do you keep looking at one another? Now I hear, he went on, that there are rations to be had in Egypt. Go down and procure rations for us there, that we may live and not die. So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to get grain rations in Egypt, which is very interesting. The idea that here we're talking about, you know, this is subtlety in the text. Jacob saw that there was that, and he said to his sons, "What are you doing? Let's go. Go down to Egypt and get some food." And what does it say? It then says, "So 10 of Joseph's brothers." How, you see that shift? It's so subtle. But the fact that the Torah tells us it's no longer the sons of Jacob going down, but rather it says that the brothers, 10 of Joseph's brothers, went down to get grain rations in Egypt. Okay, so you see a shift. And then it says, "For Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, since he feared that he might meet with disaster." So you see that the Torah is already getting us into this mindset. We're talking about a relationship between the brothers and Joseph. Okay? "Thus the sons of Israel," notice, you see how we shift back. "The sons of Israel were among those who came to procure rations, for the famine extended to the land of Canaan." Okay, so you see this, how the Torah shifts us between the sons of Joseph, and then they are the sons of Israel. Okay, you see how this is like, Torah's having some fun with us here. "Now Joseph was the visor of the land. It was he who dispensed rations to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed low to him with their faces to the ground. When Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them." Okay? He recognized them. "But he acted like a stranger toward them and spoke harshly to them. He asked them, 'Where do you come from?' And they said, 'From the land of Canaan to procure food.' For Joseph recognized his brothers. They did not recognize him." Okay? So now the question has to be asked, why is there something strange with the fact that Joseph recognizes them, but they don't recognize him? Okay? "Recalling the dreams that he had dreamed about them, Joseph said to them, 'You are spies.'" Oops, sorry. "You are spies. You have come to see the land in its nakedness." And they said, "But they said to him, 'No, my Lord, truly your servants have come to procure food. We are all of us sons of the same man. We are honest men. Your servants have never been spies.' And he said to them, 'No, you have come to see the land in its nakedness.' And they replied, 'We are your servants. We are 12 brothers, sons of a certain man in the land of Canaan. The youngest, however, is now with our father, and one is no more.' But Joseph said to them, 'It is just as I have told you. You are spies.'" He calls them miraglim. So the first time that we see this idea of a spy, miraglim, the Lashon, that exact reference, similar to what we see later of the spies that go into the land of Israel, this reference of miraglim. Joseph is pounding the table. He keeps on coming back and saying, accusing them as being miraglim, spies. "By this you shall be put to the test. Unless your youngest brother comes here by Pharaoh, you shall not depart from this place. Let one of you go and bring your brother, while the rest of you remain confined, that your words may be put to the test whether it is truth in you. Else, by Pharaoh, you are nothing but spies." So Joseph keeps on coming back to this idea of miraglim. He calls them spies. So the question is, what's going on here? Why is Joseph calling them spies? What is it that is, and again, we have to understand what it means. The Torah is using the word specifically, and Joseph accuses them as being miraglim. We need to understand that word of miraglim. But first, let's go simple. Let's try to understand the story. And the Torah is hinting to us that there's something going on here. So again, we start with the whole thing. There's no food. They come down, and it's the 10 brothers. Benjamin's not there. Joseph is missing. And then it says that when we see them for the first time, Joseph saw his brothers. He recognized them. And then he acted like a stranger, and he spoke to them difficultly or harshly. And he asked them, "From where do they come?" And then the Torah again says it repeats it. For though Joseph recognized them, even though in the Hebrew it's like, it says in the Hebrew, Vayaker Yosef et Echav, Yosef recognized his brothers, Vehem lo hikiruhu. They did not recognize him. Why does the Torah have to tell us again? It's kind of odd, right? Tell us, okay, we got it. Joseph saw the brothers and he recognized them. Again, the next line, again, it repeats itself. It tells us again, Joseph recognized the brothers. They did not recognize him. What is the Torah telling us? The Torah is kind of saying, you know, there's something wrong with the brothers because they really should have recognized Joseph. The commentators tell us that the brothers knew that Joseph was in Egypt. One of the things that they did when they came down to Egypt was that they went looking for him, because after all these years, they felt a little guilty, and they went searching for their brother. It says that they went to certain places, let's say, that were not necessarily such good places, but they assumed that Joseph would have fallen into like the dark places, so they went to look for him there. Okay? So, but the Torah says to us, so here they should be, their mindset should be that they're looking for Joseph. Now, does Joseph look so different? Some say maybe yes. So there are opinions that say that Joseph looked so different, and that's why they didn't recognize him. But maybe there's another thing that's going on here, and that the Torah is telling us that actually the brothers should have recognized him, and the guy looked exactly the same as he did before. So why didn't they recognize him? And the answer is because they didn't want to see him. They didn't want to allow themselves, or their mindset was so in one way that the obvious, the thing that was right in front of their eyes, they did not let themselves see. And that's what the Torah is doing here. The fact that the Torah repeats itself and tells us twice, no, Joseph recognized them, but they didn't, is almost to say that they should have recognized him. The same way that Joseph recognized them is the same thing that should have happened here. So what happened is that their minds were not open to it. When you don't want to see something, it could be literally right in front of your eyes. Like they have that, there's a famous video of like a basketball court, and there's like a bear that like runs through it, and you show the people a video, and they just don't see the bear, because they're not expecting to see on a basketball court a bear flying through. So the most, it's there. What did you see? The last thing that the person will tell you that they saw was the fact that there was a bear flying through the scene. Okay? So that's what's going on here. How do we see this? And where do we see that it's coming through? Because what does Joseph say to them? He keeps on referring to them as miraglim. He calls them miraglim, your spies. What is the shoresh? What is the root of miraglim? So it's resh gimel lamed, which is regel. Regel means your foot. But the idea of regilut, something that becomes like ingrained, something that's just, you go with it and become used to seeing things a certain way, is the idea of regilut, to get caught into something and to be constantly coming back to that and like seeing it. Ragil or regilut, it's almost like rote, is the root of miraglim. So the idea of a spy in this sense, it's not the guy who's going on a mission to see what's the story, but rather the idea of a miragel is someone that's seeing the world in a very specific way, almost to the point where the person is seeing things correct, right? Seeing it without the fresh eyes, correct. Okay, so now, that's why Joseph keeps on pounding on this idea. You are miraglim. You are those, because why? Because you're not seeing me. It's Joseph. I'm right here. Later on, even when he tells them, they're shocked. They can't see it because they never wanted to see it. Okay. Now, what does this have to do with our story of the spies that went into the land of Israel? So, they go into the land. They traverse the land for 40 days. and they come back and they give the report on the 9th of Av. The Jewish people fall apart, they start crying, and the rest is history, unfortunately. It's a negative history. So now, the question is, we see that they're called Miraglim, but here's the question. What did they do wrong? Right? What was their sin? We have a concept that God, when he punishes, it's midah keneged midah, which means that the crime, the punishment is equal to the crime. God dishes out a punishment that is parallel to the crime. So if that's the case, what was the punishment for the sin of the spies? The Jews ended up having to be in the desert for 40 years. The Torah tells us that God said that for each day that the spies were in the land, for each day, commensurate to the day, they were given a year of being stuck in the desert. 40 days, 40 years. So the question that's asked is, I don't understand. What did they do wrong? They came back and gave a negative report. So if you told me that they spoke for 40 minutes, and for each minute that they gave the negative report, that's why the Jews were punished with a year of punishment, each day equals a year, each hour, or each minute, let's say. So I get it. But what the Torah is telling us, actually, is that they were punished for the 40 days that they walked around the land. Almost the point where then when they got back, it's the report was actually the culmination of the 40 days. And that the 40 days was what the sin was. That for 40 days, these guys, these miraglim, these spies, were going around the land looking at things in a negative way. And that's what we're punished for. We weren't punished for the report. The report was the kind of the cherry on top, was the culmination. But for 40 days, they saw things in the way that was a problem, and that's what they're punished for. So what we see here is that the idea of miraglim, again, going back to that idea, is what we saw with Joseph and his brothers. The fact that the brothers, that Joseph keeps on accusing them of being miraglim, is because they didn't see what was right in front of their face. They didn't want to see something, and therefore they didn't see it. And the same thing is what's going on with the spies when they go into the land. Now, why is this important? The reason this is so important is because if we want to get down to what's at the core of what went wrong, and that continues to go wrong, because the temple's destruction was caused also by seeing things the wrong way. And therefore, all of the tragedies and the fact that the temple has not been rebuilt and we haven't gotten back to the land in terms of a rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, of a Mashiach in its full glory, is because as long as we don't correct what went wrong, we need to address that issue. Okay? So Tisha B'Av is, at its core, starts with the sin of the spies. And like we said earlier, right, what do we laid out, the connection between the spies sinning in the temple, is that by not seeing things properly now, what we're saying is that's the core. The core is not seeing things in a way that's proper. Therefore, it affects our relationship with God. And potentially also, you'll transfer this and say, it also seems to damage our relationships as a nation, in terms of our connectivity, right? So what we get to the core of the issue of Tisha B'Av is, we say the last thing is sinas chinam, right? This idea of baseless hatred. But the answer is, we always focus on the hatred part, but rather what it is the chinam. Chinam is for no reason. Chinam is baseless. And what does that mean? So here's where we take it to the next thing, is that how we see things is at the core of it, but in what sense is the issue? The chinam is that it really is, in a way, the chinam is creating realities that are not real. When we go away from God, so now we're talking about our connection to God, the temple, right? Where we connect to God, the land of Israel, where we connect to God. But what it requires is a connection, is also to be able to connect to the truth and to see things for what they really are, okay? So now, I want to show you something. This is the first Rashi in Chumash, okay? Because this Rashi is the craziest Rashi of all time. And it's so current. It's crazy, okay? Look at this Rashi. The Torah starts with the creation story. Now, Rashi's struggling. Why does the Torah start with the creation story? The Torah is not a history book. The Torah is a book of teaching us a way to approach life. So why would it start with the creation story? So Rashi says like this. Rabbi Isaac said, the Torah, Bereshit, which is the law book of Israel, should have commenced with the verse, this month shall be unto you, the first of the months, which is the first commandment given to Israel. Okay? The first mitzvah. Start the Torah with the first mitzvah. So what is the reason then that it commences with the account of creation? Because of the thought expressed in the text, he declared to his people the strength of his works. He gave an account of the work of creation in order that he might give them the heritage of the nations. Now listen to this. Rashi like makes a shift here, and he just, how he gets here is unbelievable. But then we'll understand, we'll bring it back to what we're talking about. For should the peoples of the world say to Israel, you are robbers because you took by force the lands of the seven nations of Canaan. You stole the land of Israel. So Israel may reply to them, all the earth belongs to the Holy One, blessed be He. He created and gave it to whom He pleased. When He willed, He gave it to them. And when He willed, He took it from them and gave it to us. Okay, so let's try to understand this Rashi. So Rashi starts off, he says that the Torah should have started from the first commandment in the Exodus story. So why didn't it start from there? Because God wanted to teach us, he wanted to teach us the strength of his works. He wanted to give us the account of the work of creation, in order that he might give them the heritage of the nations. Rashi's saying creation equals the land of Israel. Because that's how he shifts into the next thing. He says that the whole reason he gave us the creation story is because you know what the power of the land of Israel is? The land of Israel is the place where creation began. And in the land of Israel, the whole idea of creativity, of the power of creation, is there. It's the seat of creation. But then the craziest thing, it shifts into this whole thing. Then, because you know what's going to happen? The world is going to contest Israel's rights, the Jewish people's rights to the land of Israel. It's crazy. Rashi says this. This is today, the United Nations, right? So there's going to come a time when the world is going to contest our rights to the land, and we're going to say the Creator has the rights to give it to whom He sees fit. He gave it to the seven nations at first. He'll take it from them and He'll give it to us. Okay, so what do we see here? We see that the whole power of the land of Israel is the idea of beginnings, of creativity. The power to create is the power of the land of Israel. The power of God is the power of creation, of firsts, of creativity, of things being fresh and new and growing. And that is in the land of Israel. Okay? So now, the most important thing that a person needs to understand is that the only way to really tap into that power is when you're willing to not get stuck on your own preconceived understandings and notions. We see that with Joseph's brothers. They came down, they wanted to see things a certain way. They couldn't even see what was right in front of them. The same thing with the spies at the time of Moses. They came into the land, they wanted to see things for a certain way. They can never get past that. And they fell into the trap. Our issue, we live with this today. It's so much in front of us as well. We all come to the table with our preconceived notions of things, and we can't get past those things. And then it leads us down very bad paths. And so, in addressing Tisha B'Av, you know what Tisha B'Av is? It's the day of Avelut. It's the day of mourning. But Avelut means, in the core, is Aval. Aval means but. When a person comes to dealing with death and loss on that level, when we come to that place, it shakes our world. Everything that we were used to, when we lose a close loved one, everything, that world view gets completely destroyed. But it makes us question, it brings us back to questioning and refocusing and trying to see what's true. Avelut is about coming to truth. The holiday of Tisha B'Av, and I call it the holiday, it's called a moed. In the Eicha book, it calls it the holiday, a moed. We don't even say tachanun. It's a way of saying we don't do certain things because it's associated with positive things. So what's so special? It's the holiday that gives us the opportunity to take a hard look at things and say, am I seeing it for what it is? Or maybe I need to be able to take a step back and refocus and expand how I look at things. And that goes for, you know, let's call it for the interpersonal relationships. We automatically have reactions to people in a certain way. We'll judge people a certain way based on those preconceived notions. So Tisha B'Av says to us, you need to take a step back and you need to look and see the goodness in the people. You have to be down the cop's slope. You have to judge people favorably. At its core, what it's saying is, I need to look and see things in a better way. The same thing when it comes to worship of God. We get stuck in certain things. We see things a certain way. The obligation of the day of Tisha B'Av and its extension is to basically come back and start again and say, we need to expand. We need to take a better look and say, am I making the things that should be essential side things and the side things the essential things? I'll give you an example. All right. We have the Kotel in the back of Clare. It says that we should fear the temple. We should fear. As Mikdashi Tiro, I should fear the temple. And what are we supposed to fear? So we all fall into this trap. The temple, we have the Western Wall. We know, we feel that it's a holy place. We get there. What do we end up doing? We worship the wall instead of God. We fall into a trap. The wall all of a sudden takes on the sanctity to the point where I'm touching the wall. The wall now is the holy thing, and God is secondary, right? We all do it, okay? This is a common trap that we all suffer from. And so what Tisha B'Av says is we need to get back to refocus on always realizing what's important and what's not. We all get caught up in certain things with our relationships. We get caught up in the way we worship. We get caught up in the way we, everything. Just always like focus on, we automatically get attached to things. We become miraglim. We become ragil. We become regila. We get stuck in and we get stuck to like the things that are not important, and we forget about the important things, like Shabbos. Another example, Shabbos. We're supposed to enjoy Shabbos. But Shabbos shouldn't become just the food. It shouldn't become, you know, right? It's all about the chalent. It's all about the great, l'chaim that we can make. Those are nice side things. Those are things that we should enjoy. But what's Shabbos? Shabbos is recognizing that God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh, and that he took us out of Egypt and made us his people. And that we can make it a time where we let everything stop and we get reconnected to our close ones. So we sometimes, the shift away from that which is the essential, we all fall into that trap. Tisha B'Av tells us we can't become a raglim. We can't get stuck on the side points. And we all fall into those traps. And so the holiday and what will eventually become a clear holiday instead of it being the sad day mixed with some goodness is that when we are able to refocus and we're able to see things for the truth and put our focus on the ultimate, which is God, our relationship with God directly, not the side things, not the side shows, and the idea of how we treat others. It's not the hatred, it's the chinam, it's the baselessness, it's when we create, fiction instead of it being. That's what I heard someone say. It's a very funny way of looking at why do we call a nonfiction, that which is, instead of just calling it truth or reality, we call it a nonfiction. So we live in a world of fiction. We create fictions. We're much more comfortable in that world. And so Tisha B'Av tells us that we need to work towards seeing things as nonfiction, the truth, and of striving for emet, for real hardcore truth, which is not easy and by the way, painful. That's what Avelut is about. Avelut is emet. We see things much more clearly, unfortunately, when we get to those places of loss. But when we do, when we come back, when we come to that place of Tisha B'Av, it's from there that the Mashiach comes. It says that Mashiach is born on Tisha B'Av. What does that mean? It's because when we are able to tap into seeing reality for what it is, then we are able to really get connected in the truest sense. And hopefully, if we're able to work on that, that instead of being meraglim, of people who get caught up in seeing only what we want to see, but being able to take a step back and being able to see the bigger picture, I think that way, if we're able to, work on those things, then hopefully we'll be able to, see the salvation in our day. Any questions? Everybody's muted.
It was excellent.
Great.
So what should have happened? Moses would have sent the spies, and the spies should have come back. How many days? In one day?
No, they should have gone for 40 days and come back. Instead of...
Did he say that they were supposed to be gone for 40 days? Who decided how long they were there?
That's a good question. I think, to go around the country and to be able to see things, they could go for 40 days. That was not if they would have seen things the way Kalev and Joshua, they saw things for the way they were. They understood they saw the bigger picture. They didn't get caught up. Look, there's a deeper, explanation as to that. Going back to this Rashi that talks about the land as being the place, the seat of creation. There's this energy that we know that when we go to Israel, there's this powerful energy of, we call it that the next sentence in the Torah is, V'ha'aretz ha'itah tova vo'o v'choshech al p'nei tov. There's crazy energy in the land of Israel. So they felt that, and it was probably too much, it was overpowering, it was too much for them to handle, that they were scared by it, and they came back with that negativity. So clearly that's something that was, that even today you go to Israel, there is an incredible power of, the energy is just so overpowering that it's not something you can harness. I think that's the real courage is for someone to jump into that energy and to be able to just go with it and not fight it. It's almost like when you're in a current in the water of the ocean, and it's just taking you along. If you fight it, you'll get taken down. But it's the idea of going with the flow. That's the land of Israel. That's that power of the creative, the work of, right? He gave his account of the creation of this power of that's in Israel, that we can tap into. But it's very daunting. And these were big people, so that they fell into that trap.
So who came up with the words Meraglim when Joseph said that to his brothers?
Joseph.
Joseph came up with that?
Yeah, he was referring to them. But that's the. I always wondered, why was he going with that word?
That was said before Moses sent the spies out.
What is this?
Well, Joseph called his brother the spies.
Yeah, way before. This is way earlier. And you're talking about hundreds of years earlier.
This is a great connection you made.
Correct.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Yeah, so awesome. It's right. Isn't that unbelievable? It's
unbelievable.
So where did you get all that from?
What? This.
Who are his sources? Are you going to ask him to give up his sources?
No, it's a great question.
I love it. I love the connections you made. I've never heard this before.
There you go. So no. So the answer to that last thing I heard from Rabbi Weinberg from Israel. In terms of the connection of the Meraglim, that idea, because again, when you go back to the story of Joseph and his brothers, you're just like wondering, why does he keep on calling them spies? Like, it's the strangest thing, but this is one explanation. I don't think it's the only explanation, but I think it's a very, very awesome. Powerful explanation.
Awesome.
We are all Meraglim.
Exactly. We struggle with this. It's built in, and that's the... The avoda, the work is to be able to really somehow try to. I mean, there are ways to do it. I think by being with like studying Torah. Torah, if you study Torah and you work on that, there's certain truths that are there that help us see things, the world for the way that maybe we wouldn't normally see it. If like we get caught up in today's world, they're telling us how to think, right? You know, you have to think a certain way. So the Torah is going to tell you, you don't have to think that way. You know, there's in every movement, there's always truth. There's always bits, there are elements of truth in all these movements, but they distort it. There's a distortion as well. You can take communism, you can take socialism, you can take, going into our day, all of these things, like the idea of global warming. The idea is we should take care of the world. The world, the earth is, God gave us this gift. It's this world. We should take care of it. But then it becomes a religion. It's like, okay. So, all these things have elements of seeds of truth, kernels of truth that then, what do you do with it? Do you take it? How far do you take it? You know, so the Torah is something that's an objective reality or truth that's supposed to teach us how to think and also how to then create balance and try to again help us get to a place of objectivity as opposed to the subjective craziness that we get lost in. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Excellent. Have a great day. All right. All the best.